welcome to the Damp Detectives podcast, investigating the causes of and the solutions to damp and mould in your home.
Hello, welcome to Damp Detectives. I'm here with Robert, CEO and founder of Damp Detectives, and we're going to be following a quite eclectic mix of subjects today, but we're going to be starting off with tanking. Now, Robert, we hear some people have their walls tanked because of damp, but that doesn't stop the problem. Now, why is that?
Well, it depends why it was tanked in the first place.
Right.
If it's tanked for the wrong reason, it will never solve the problem. There are two types of tanking, mainly. One is a very sympathetic tanking to the building. It's called air gap. It's not really tanking per se. And what they do is they put a skin, a plastic skin, pinned onto a wall, and they allow the moisture to come out of the wall, be guided down the plastic skin, probably into a gully, off to a sump pump, and then it gets pumped away. That allows the wall to basically breathe and to relieve its pressure. That is a very sympathetic way to actually control the moisture in the house. The other way is you get a cement mix with an anti-damp ingredient in it, and you just plaster this over the wall. You paint it. Paint it for a couple of layers, and it physically stops the damp coming through as a liquid, but it will allow the damp to come through as a gas. Now, this doesn't relieve the pressure on the wall, and effectively, the liquid remains in the wall. And you're not actually treating the wall, you're simply blocking the problem out of sight, out of mind. But you haven't fixed the problem. The irony about it is, if it gets really cold, then if there's moisture in the walls and that moisture freezes, it will start to break up the wall. It will start to split the bricks or the blocks or whatever. And even nature has got the brains. The trees will cut down their moisture, the amount of intake in their moisture in the actual tree. They'll cut it right back when they're starting to hibernate, because they don't want to have too much moisture actually in the trunk, because if it freezes, they'll split. So even the trees have got the brains not to lock moisture in themselves. If you're locking the problem in the wall, then you have another problem. You introduce a new problem. Every action has a reaction.
Yep.
So if you stop something, you haven't stopped it. As far as the forces of physics are concerned, you haven't stopped it at all. It just simply finds another way. And if you increase the pressure in the wall, so it will simply increase and increase. If the original cause of the problem is continuing to happen, then the wall simply gets wetter and wetter and wetter. You haven't actually achieved anything.
You've just disguised it.
It basically disguises it, but it can be a problem, can be a serious problem.
Yeah.
I mean, take an example. If you tank a cob wall, they're made of clay, sand, straw, any odd bits.
Medieval.
Yes, it was done. There are cottages built in the 14th century that are still standing today. And when cob walls have set and they've dried out, they've been described as hard as concrete. Very efficient, lovely buildings. I wish we built them more, in all honesty. Brilliant buildings. But the one thing, if you actually physically tank a cob wall, if there's moisture in a cob wall, by tanking, all you're doing is blocking it. You're not allowing the release of pressure. You're simply blocking the water in the wall. If you hold the water in a cob wall, then the clay gets wetter and wetter and simply becomes mud. Mud flows and the wall will collapse.
Just disintegrate.
It simply disintegrate. Just very recently, situation occurred with a cob wall. A lady was just buying it. And a surveyor from a well-known national institute within this country, who are very good surveyors, brilliant surveyors, and commonly do house buying surveys. He went along and surveyed this cob house, and one of the things he found was that in three of the walls, there was moisture. Now, he uses a certain type of meter. They're not designed to be experts in this field. They have a get-out-of-jail clause that basically says, if I find damp, let's pass it on to somebody else. We'll pass it on to an expert. In this particular case, In his instructions, he recommended the work was given to a damp remedial company to carry out damp remedial work. Now, you have the choice of the sympathetic work, which I said allows the wall to breathe.
Yep.
And be controlled, or you have the unsympathetic work to a builder, which simply tanks it and holds it in. And this is very recent. The company that went to do it simply tanked it. So they completely tanked the lower section of three of the main walls of this building. Now, this is a problem because not only is it a problem for the poor old house buyer who's now in the property, it's the fact that in the future, this will be a major problem for the Cobb wall. And the Cobb wall will, it's not a question of may or may not, It will become unstable in years to come. It depends on how the moisture got in there in the first place and whether it's continuing to get in there. Now, normal Cobb walls have a little degree of moisture in them all the time, because inevitably they don't have a damp-proof course. There's no separation in the foundations. The moisture gently comes up and it evaporates out of the walls. Perfect. But the problem is these surveyors generally have a type of unit, little survey meter, that is geared to be extremely accurate in wood and not so accurate, maybe a little bit of a guesswork in any other material. And there are so many materials. We're looking at brick, block, we're looking at sand blocks, we're looking at cob, concrete. The same meter goes on. And the same meter may record a higher reading when, if you use another type of meter, which we do, because we've got about three or four different meters, if you use a different type of meter, that will show that there is actually no problem at all with this wall, and it's perfectly acceptable. And although I haven't visited this property ourselves at the moment, I know that having seen the recording on his particular meter that he registered, it would not have shown a high reading had they used a different type of meter.
Right.
It would have been a perfectly acceptable reading for a Cobb wall, because Cobb walls naturally have a small amount of moisture in them. And therefore, all this tanking, not only was it unnecessary, but a dangerous precedent is now being entertained and being orchestrated.
That means as well, by doing the tanking on a Cobb wall which all those hundreds of years ago, they knew what they were doing. And they knew that that wall would look after itself, as it were, without interference of any sort, that this tanking is interfering with the capillary action, if you like, the actual functionality of a Cobb wall.
Yeah.
If you start messing with it, it's like, don't fix it if it's not broke.
You're quite right. The thing about Cobb walls is it's nature in action.
Yeah.
Man has, through evolution, managed to work out a building material, and from that he builds his own houses, and is done from going from caves into Cobb walls or whatever he went to. But the point is, it's done through evolution, and they understand the fact it's been tried, tested, not a problem.
And it works.
It works. Nowadays, we're in a situation that a lot of buildings are physically using materials that have not had that degree of testing and have not been exposed to the elements for any major length of time. It used to be donkey's years ago, you'd find stuck on cliff edges a board that's been painted by some well-known exterior paint company. They'd put different types of paint and different colours on this board and leave it.
See how they react.
Yeah. Every 5 years, they'd come back and measure the thickness, measure the intensity of the colour, measure everything about those paints, and they would expose them to salt water, you know, strong winds, heavy rain, that sort of thing. I've never seen that kind of work be done since. Since the 80s, nobody does that sort of thing anymore. So the point is, we're now in a way that let's get that building up quick, and let's get that. So we'll use materials that can get the building up quick, but we're still missing one or two major points. You can have a prefab building built in a factory, which is absolutely brilliant. Go click, 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 put it together. Not a problem. But when you're starting to use materials in the way that we build our houses outside, totally exposed to the elements, and we build it stage by stage, right the way through the winter, it's chucking it down with rain. It's everything's being thrown at it, puts it together. There is now an advisory put out by the national builders who actually say it could take up to 2 years for your house to actually dry out.
Your new build.
Your new build house could take 2 years to dry out. And they're saying, if it hasn't dried out within 2 years, you've got a problem. Well, yeah, if you hadn't dried out within a year, you've got a problem.
Yeah, you've got a problem.
You've got a problem.
Not we haven't created the problem.
No. And the point is, this is simply the way things are going. There's no reason at all to play a blame game. There is every reason to find out a new way of educating. If you're going to use these new materials in buildings, then encapsulate the building so that it's waterproof while you're building it. Now, okay, a builder will go, well, it puts a lot of money on the bill. But at the end of the day, if you start the system and you have reusable material where you can encapsulate houses, then you haven't got a problem. If you, yes, use a piece of plastic and then throw it away every time, you're not only got more waste, you know, everything is the wrong side of it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, by simply just building houses totally open to the elements and then saying, off you go, here are the keys. Oh, by the way, yes, you've got mold here, mold there, everywhere else. Oh, don't worry, a couple of years, you'll be all right. Insects, this is one of the things we have quite a lot of. Plaster beetles come hurtling around houses. Yeah, don't worry. They'll be gone in a couple of years. We can dry houses. I mean, damp detectors can dry the houses, can speed up the process. But to my belief, this is the wrong way of going about it. It needs a change of thinking, and it needs a re-looking at the materials we're using, get them properly tested before they're actually put out on the buildings so that people are no longer used as guinea pigs.
Yeah, it's chasing your tail, isn't it? It's the horse and the door and the being bolted. It's that saying.
Absolutely.
It's the wrong way round.
Yeah.
But like you said, all these materials should be tested fully. But what they're then doing is saying, it'll dry out in 2 years and then they're gone.
Yes.
There's no comeback. Yeah, it's guaranteed.
They say it's guaranteed. But I went to a building a couple of years ago where it had rendered panels. So they put the rendered panels up. And then they spray a bit of render on top of it. On the weathered side, these panels had worn right down. They were so smooth, it's as if somebody had gone with sandpaper and just rubbed all the render right off these panels, and they were down to the bare panels. And he had a problem with penetrating damp. On the other side, away from driving wind and rain, the panels had a reasonable depth to them,
right,
and they were still obviously working. I rang up the company that made the panels and I said to them, what's the lifespan of these panels? And they said, about 10 years. That's our guarantee is 10 years. I said, what happens after 10 years?
Yes.
Well, the guarantee runs out, doesn't it?
So, I said, well, it's then their problem.
Somebody's paid $500,000 for a house.
Yes.
Are you saying in 10 years?
10
that
years.
They've now got to completely re-render the building. But in that time, in that 10 years, water's been penetrating because of the erosion. So people are not getting value for money. It's like buying a car and the guarantee on the wheels is 500 miles. So, you know, you take your car and go to Glasgow and we find the wheels fall off just before we get there. You know, you're not getting value for money. The market needs to be looked at instead of it simply being a profit. I know there are many house builders who build brilliant houses. There are also a lot of houses that are going up. And we find that many of our houses that we have to go to with damp surveying are less than 5 years old.
See, that's shocking. What is it? The average sort of 350,000, 400,000 for a smallish detached house. And it's like, they don't say that in the advertising, do they?
No,
you know, that it'll last you about 5 years before you'll start having problems. I don't mean it'll fall down.
No.
But before you start experiencing problems,
yes,
it'll last 5 years. ish.
You've already got a huge mortgage. You may have a 20-year mortgage. You don't want to be putting any more money into your house in that 20 years.
I just think it's shocking.
At the end of the day. Of course, obviously, when we were living in cob houses, we'd come out of our caves and we were living in cob houses.
Yeah.
We could just mix up a bit more calmedure and a bit more straw and stuff and pack it up.
Yeah.
And wouldn't be a problem. But today, with our health and safety, everything, all the legislation that goes with it, scaffolding, all this, everything that goes with it, you're now talking a major costly exercise to do any work, any kind of work. You can't really do any small work now. You've now got to have all the apparatus up and running. And so at the end of the day, to my mind, when you go to a house that's 100 years old, I mean, our house is 100 years old.
So is mine.
Yeah. Well, when you go to a house that's 100 years old, you expect it to last another 100 years.
Yeah.
And you might consider you've got to do one or two things about it.
Yeah.
But if I had just bought a house and 5 years later, I've got damp, and it's because it's the material that's been used in the manufacture assembly of that house is not up to the job. As far as I'm concerned, any part of any house should have a guarantee of 50 years.
Yeah.
And that's the end of it. Because this is what I expect. You know, you have a family home, you get married, you bring up your kids, and your kids leave home, but you might still have the old pad still there for when they come back occasionally. Then you get attacked by grandchildren. You know, you're expecting to live in that house 40, 50 years maybe. Yeah. In that 40, 50 years, you want that house to be working and, you know, not falling
functioning
apart.
Functioning as it should.
As it should in that 40-year period. That's my gripe for today.
It's very valid. I've had problems with my flat, which is in an Edwardian house, but they're the sort of problems I would expect. I started getting leaks in a bay window because the flashing at the top had perished.
Yeah.
Well, I'd expect after 100 years, that's fine.
Yes.
But as you say, if I'd bought a new house, I would expect it to function for many decades. And the fact that it probably won't and that I will experience problems within 5, maybe 10 years, is shocking.
It is. It's absolutely hopeless. I mean, I think I'll go and buy a caravan instead. I mean, at the end of the day, if you take an example, you take a shower. The silicon that you put around the shower.
Yeah.
We've experienced the fact that basically silicon only lasts 2 years around the shower. Now, it doesn't say that on the tin.
No.
And most people, when they have a shower put in, it gets siliconed. Well, it's fine. Let's forget about it. And 5 or 10 years later, they have got major damp issues. They've got mold spreading out in all sorts of directions because it didn't occur to them that the silicon has got such a short working life.
They didn't know because, as you say, it doesn't say that on the tin.
It doesn't say on the tin.
They
think, never sell
they think
any
it's
silicon.
A job done and that will last.
Yeah.
And it's not.
They'd never sell any silicon if they knew it only lasted 2 years.
The strap line on the advert, by the way, it'll only last 2 years. Oh, great, I'll get a tube of that.
That's on the very fast bit they put in afterwards.
Yes, terms and conditions.
But I think this is the problem of materials. We have to get back to thinking. Here we are talking about build more houses. You know, our population is growing.
Yeah.
We have to build more houses which are up to the standard that are needed because the population is not going to pack up and move up after 20 years and move away from the houses. You need those houses to be there for at least 100 years, if not two. At the end of the day, we've simply got to rethink.
We've talked about the cob houses and how the functionality of the way they're built, I mean, ahead of their time, really. Talking about tanking of a cob wall, how does that affect stone walls?
Well, there's an interesting scenario that's recently developed. I went on a survey just a couple of months ago where we have this scenario whereby surveyors are going into properties, sticking a meter on a wall, saying, that reads damp, get somebody in to have a look at it. And inevitably, not always, but inevitably, the majority of the times you're going to end up with a tanking scenario. Now, there's a lady who bought a house 15 years ago. It's made of stone. It's over 300 years old. Beautiful house. It was part of a house. It was a bit of a house and a bit of something else, and a farrier was on the end of it. So you can imagine the horses in there, the way it was a working property.
All mixed functions.
All mixed up with stone walls. Now, stone walls are a mix and a mash of all sorts of things in those walls, but basically stone. They're always going to give you a moisture reading. Stone walls inevitably will have some degree of a moisture reading somewhere in those walls. So 15 years ago, she applies to buy this house, and the mortgage company says, right, you have a survey. The surveyor found a bit of damp in the stone walls, in the downstairs, around the lower part. So the mortgage company insists that this lady has to have, a company goes forward and comes up with a tanking and arrangement. Right. I think it was £5,500 tanking arrangement. The mortgage company said, you have to have this work done if you wish to get the full mortgage. We're going to hold back part of it. And I believe this is a common practice with a lot of properties. They hold back part until work is done.
So you've got to get the work done.
Another box ticked.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, all this is a ticking exercise. Because at the end of the day, the mortgage company wants to have litigation taken out of there. There's no way that anything can come back and bite them afterwards.
Yeah.
So she does this work. Now, the walls still have damp in them because it's all been tanked, but because the pressure outside was cement render, so that locked the moisture
in.
It's now tanked on the inside, that's locked in, and therefore now you have basically a wet wall. And okay, it's stone, it's not so bad as cob, but it's still not doing the wall any good. So now a buyer comes along, they decide that the family's moved on, they're going to downsize, they're trying to sell the property. So a buyer comes along, house buyer survey, sticks a meter on the wall, oh, this one's damp. Now, it's already been tanked.
Yes.
So the mortgage company goes, whoa, you've had it tanked. We're not going to give you a mortgage. Because you've tanked it, the moisture is now locked into that property. So we're not going to give you a mortgage. So she lost a buyer because they couldn't get a mortgage because they had already followed the instructions of a previous mortgage company who had said tank it. So now they're in a real catch-22 scenario.
Yeah.
Are they going to have a mortgage company that might accept the fact it's been tanked, or are they going to have to take the tanking off? In which case, if they take the tanking off, will they damage the wall? Will they damage the wall taking the tanking off? You know, this is a farcical scenario. And it is constantly coming to the fore. This kind of situation is constantly happening. So we've got to wake up and educate the people who are, A, telling them to go and tank the property, and B, tanking the property.
If you have any questions or queries for future podcasts, then you can email robert@dampdetectives.co.uk and you could be part of the next show. The Damp Detectives Podcast, investigating damp and mould in your home.
It is like you said, what I don't understand is why there is not a mechanism in place whereby people like yourself can go to mortgage companies and say, look, we need to explain this to you. This, when you keep asking people, telling people to tank their property or we won't give them a mortgage, you need to know that that is not going to solve the problem. It's going to disguise it and they'll just become a bigger problem further down the road. But there's no mechanism for that, is there? They're not listening to people like you, like damp detectives, who are saying this won't work.
Yeah.
So the process just keeps repeating itself. It's a revolving process.
Yes.
Then the next company says, oh no, you've had it tanked, so we're not going to give you a mortgage. That's nonsense.
It is nonsense, but unfortunately it's common practice. And it's becoming more common practice the more it goes on. The situation is common and it's repeating itself and repeating itself.
Yeah.
What we don't have is a link between education and mortgage companies. And the mortgage companies don't really understand why they're ticking the box, except the reason why they're ticking the box is litigation. And we're in this never-ending circle that is, who can we go and blame? Can we blame this person? Can we blame that person? It's a complete waste of time. No point blaming anybody. What we have to do is break that cycle and start with education. Education, going to the mortgage companies, saying to these guys, tanking per se is not the answer. You need to have an understanding of why the property is damp in the first place. Is it actually damp, or are they using the wrong meters?
Yeah.
For a start, let's start with the meters. Let's start with the surveyors who went and put the meter on the wall in the first place to get a real understanding of the limitation of that meter that they're actually physically using.
And like you said, different building materials behave differently to the meters.
Yes,
so you need different meters, not just the same meter.
Different meters. You need a series of meters so that you can actually cover the series of materials that are being put in the building. 1 meter does not work. 1 meter works brilliantly for wood, but the rest of the time it's a kind of a, ooh, this is slightly wet or maybe a little bit too wet. Or if I was a piece of wood, I'd think this was a bit wet, you know?
Yeah.
So the point is you need the right equipment, but then you can't expect the house buyer surveyors to be experts in everything. Yeah, it's like GPs at the end of the day. They are there to say, will the building stand up over the period of time of the mortgage? And so the mortgage company wants to know, is this house going to stand for the next 20, 30 years or the length of the mortgage? I don't know what their parameters are. It might be 50 years.
Yeah.
But the mortgage companies need to have an understanding that ticking the box just because they think that clears me of any litigation, maybe in the future it won't clear them of litigation because we've got this horrible practice now of going back way into the past whereby somebody made a decision on the information and the education they had at that time and now saying, well, we're better informed. He should have been better informed. Let's blame him. Which is rubbish and totally unnecessary.
Yeah.
You know, get out this blame culture, get out of this litigation culture, stop this ambulance chasing of lawyers, stop the ambulance chasing of, oh, did something happen in your life? Well, somebody's going to pay for it. While we continue to have this in the system, we will continue to have the box ticking exercise and we will not be able to get the education through to the people who are ticking that damn box to actually realise that what they're doing might ruin that building in years to come.
And the bill is being picked up by the homeowner every
time. The homeowner is always the unlucky one in the middle.
Yeah.
And which is a great shame.
You're telling me. So, Robert, we've talked about tanking. Now, I know there are other methods, obviously, of solving these problems. And tell me, what is a chemical damp-proof course?
Okay. Well, let's start with the fact. A chemical damp-proof course is basically a silicon-based cream that is injected into a wall. It's injected into the mortar line. The idea being that it spreads very gently along the mortar line and creates this kind of a lacquer that stops water coming through it.
Right.
If we go back to the basics of what is a damp-proof course, a damp-proof course is lower down, it's not very high above the ground, and it stops moisture wicking its way up the bricks from the ground and coming into the walls higher up.
Yes.
Now, there are a lot of people, it's common perception that a damp-proof course stops water coming up the wall and that's its role in life. It's only half the story, because if you only think that, then you will miss a lot of other things. A damp-proof course is actually a membrane that physically stops water going through it. Now, you may have said, well, I've just said that. It stops water coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it also stops water going down. And if you take an example whereby you've got a leaking window and you've got a normal damp-proof course in the building, but a leaking window just above, water starts coming down the wall from the window, hits the damp-proof course.
And stops.
It won't go through it. It can't stop because, okay, it can be blocked. Its passage can be blocked. So it will find another way. So it starts to spread along the damp-proof course. And eventually you'll start seeing it above your skirting board, just a little bit higher on your skirting board, and you'll see a wet strip along the wall. And you'll call somebody in and he'll go, oh, it's rising damp because it's coming up. It's rising. True rising damp is when it physically comes through the damp-proof course.
Yes.
So that the damp-proof course is actually breached or broken or failed in some way. But this is not rising damp. This is actually damp coming down.
Yeah, it's the opposite.
complete opposite, but it has the symptoms of rising damp to a degree. Now, an example, I went to a hairdresser's who had a major problem. One of his walls was very unsightly. The plaster was falling off. And several people, he'd had three lots of chemical damp-proof course injected into this wall because just above the skirting board, all the plaster was falling off and it was constantly wet. Well, I always think if you put in one chemical damp-proof course and the problem hasn't been resolved, it doesn't mean stick another one in.
No.
You might have to think, hang on a minute, maybe something else is going on here. But no, there's actually been shown on social media where up to six chemical damp-proof courses have been injected different times. It looks like somebody's got a machine gun and just peppered the wall. And they've all failed because that's not the reason.
That's not the problem.
That's not the problem. It's not rising damp. So on this occasion, this guy had got a air conditioning unit stuck on his wall. And using the whole variety of meters, I could establish that the damp was actually coming from the air conditioning unit. And it came down the beautiful triangle down towards the thing. And actually what it was simply a pipe from the back of the air conditioning unit going out of the wall. And this pipe was condensing so heavily that it simply water just dripped off this pipe into the wall. But you couldn't see it until it hit the damp-proof course and then spread. Okay. So it's a classic example of chemical damp-proof courses being injected for completely the wrong reasons.
Having dealt with houses, I'm interested to talk about flats, blocks of flats. And if I was in a block of flats, what problems in the damp spectrum would I experience, could I experience?
Well, I don't want to scare anybody who's living in a block of flats.
But you're going to.
But I'm going to.
Yeah.
The thing about, obviously, places of multiple occupancy, yes, you're living in your flat and it's your world, and then problems start to develop.
Uh-huh.
Now, quite often you'll get the management company may well send a surveyor or somebody in the management team to come and have a look at your flat and see why you've got mould, condensation, these sort of things. And so they will make a decision on what they find in your flat. And quite often, they won't find anything wrong with your flat. They'll go around with a little meter. While the wall's dry, it's got to be you. Therefore, this is lifestyle condensation. Anybody who says that to me gets promptly shot and buried in the back garden. So this is because they deal with each flat solely on its own. And you may have one person in flat A, it's got a problem on the ground floor, and they go and look at it and decide this is lifestyle condensation. And then on the second floor or the third floor, somebody's got a problem up there. They go and look at it, can't see any problems around the flat, therefore this has got to be. There's no other reason as far as they're concerned. It's either a wet flat and they can't find moisture in the flat, so they have a go at the occupant. It's got to be your lifestyle. And you get this so common. Put in more extractor fans. Put in bigger extractor fans. They say, yes, it's your lifestyle. They improve the ventilation and nothing happens.
Right.
They tend to find that for a couple of months, 2 or 3 months, it improves and then it goes back to square one again. And so when they keep complaining, people come back, can't find anything wrong, has to be you. It's the way you're living your life. Now, the things that can happen in flats, a lot of people don't realise that the flat 3 floors up can have a major influence in the flat on the ground floor because they're connected by the very block.
By the structure.
By the actual structure. I went to one flat years ago where they had problems in one bedroom of a ground floor flat. The wall got wet. It was constantly put down to lifestyle, lack of ventilation. They put a hole in the wall. I always call it a hole in the wall. Passive vent, but basically it's simply a hole in the wall. Right next to your bed so you freeze in the winter.
Oh, nice.
I love that one. And then didn't cure it. The tenants kept changing every year. They just up and go every year. They're there one winter. That's it, gone. I then found that it was, in that particular case, it was a leak in the roof 4 floors up. And simply by tracking it, all the way up to the top of the roof, and then throwing 200 litres of water over that section of roof, then went back down again, sat and waited. And I did actually think, after half an hour, I thought, oh, maybe I've misjudged this one. Maybe it's not working. And then, great, water started flowing into the flap. It took more than half an hour to work its way back down. It started flowing into the flat. Once they fixed the roof, once they dried the flat, problem gone.
Problem gone.
Now, this lady had this problem for 15 years, and everyone ignored it because they only looked at that flat.
In isolation.
In isolation. What I'm saying is that you can have somebody two floors up who maybe their bath leaks. They have half a ton of water. It gradually leaks out of their bath. It goes into the structure. You can have a split pipe on another floor. Somebody next to you has some other problems. And eventually, the block of flats gets wetter and wetter.
Yeah.
Now, the block of flats is either rendered or painted to death. And inevitably, as one person leaves a flat, if it's a tenanted flat, the crew normally walk in and just simply paint it to death. They won't actually look and see what was the initial problem. It's not in their remit. They're not educated to do it. It's not what they're there to do. So we tend to find that quite often it can be the physical block that is the problem. And therefore, we at Damp Detectives will look at the block. And that way then you can actually establish maybe a series of events over the past 5 years or up to 10 years, which have gradually happened. You can find that there's probably in the region of about 700 or 800 litres of water within that block, not actually creating a problem per se. You can't see a damp wall, no. But it's all there.
Trapped in the structure of the building.
Absolutely trapped.
With no escape.
No.
Nowhere to get out.
Because of the materials that we use, there's no breathability in the actual
Absolutely.
Block. I'll give you an example where a block of flats, they were wealthy flat owners. They were not tenanted. There were 50 flats in this block and three flats on different floors in different parts of the actual block had problems. They had mold and condensation problems. The other flats didn't. So the management company, making the assumption that condensation is due to lack of insulation or lack of ventilation, installed some extractor fans, and they put £50,000 worth of insulation on the north wall because they thought, well, north wall is north, therefore it's colder, therefore, so they stuck 50
that's,
grand.
That's the wall that's getting hit by all the weather.
Yeah. So anyway, this didn't improve anything. It had no effect whatsoever. So when I was called, I went and established that each flat had actually had an individual problem and there was a lot of moisture in the block.
Yeah.
So I set up a drying area. I dried the block for 2 months. I managed to pull out about 800 litres of water out of the block, which I could measure. It wasn't in a bucket. It was done through instruments. And at the end of it, I went with the management company surveyor to the three people and said, have you noticed anything different? And they went, well, we haven't noticed anything different except there isn't any mould and there's no condensation. But we couldn't notice anything about the building, no difference at all. So this one particular little lady who had told me that she had never had a leak in her flat except the ceiling had collapsed and the leaking bath upstairs, but it wasn't her leak, it was at the bath upstairs. But that made her flat totally sodden. And of course, they repaired it, but nobody dried it. They just repaired it.
Just locked all the water in.
Just, yeah, put a new ceiling up, painted it. That was it. So I said to her, can you think of anything that's different now after the last couple of months? And she said, well, the only difference is that when I dry all my clothing on the radiators, it used to take a couple of days for them to dry. Now it takes a couple of hours. And the surveyor said to me, he did this for 3 years, three consecutive years on the anniversary of this event. And he kept saying to me, I have no idea what you've done, but you fixed it. I said, I didn't actually fix it. I simply dried the building.
Yeah.
And the building was now capable of accepting moisture again because it was a dry building. And this is the main problem with blocks of flats. And this is the message I'd love to get across to management companies, is don't look at the flats individually. You have a massive record of work that's been done in flats. And if you look at it closely, you will see links. There will be a pattern. And if you follow that pattern, I mean, if you can't work it out, call us. But if you follow that pattern, then you'll realise that the building is probably getting very wet. It's probably got extremely wet. And all you need to do is dry it.
And they'll save a great deal of money by not treating every flat as if it's an individual problem, stripping the walls, putting in vents, like yes, you say, extractors, yes. Then going to the next flat and doing the same
doing
thing.
Exactly the same.
Because they're not addressing the whole.
No. And that's what they need to do, is address the whole thing.
Robert, finally, people often complain about feeling unwell and thinking it's the flat, having respiratory problems. They're told there's mold in their home, but they can't see it. It's not visible. How do you test for that? How do you find out whether that is the case or not?
Okay, well, it can be done by air quality testing, which we can do. The air quality testing, mold can't be hidden, whether it's invisible or whether it's bleedingly obvious. But it has a DNA. It is in the atmosphere. And we're not talking so much about there may be mold spores or there might be mycotoxins. And they both work in different ways. But the mycotoxins from the mold, that it may be, as an example, if you were in a block of flats and a flat nearby could have mold, which was affecting your flat, but you actually didn't have mold in your flat. You can't make a block of flats airtight, so you cannot separate flat A from flat B. Although they are separate, they've got separate entrances, you can't separate the airflow or the pressure flow between blocks of flats.
Right.
And if there's movement of air because of pressure or movement of moisture because of pressure, there will also be movement of spores or mycotoxins travelling the exact same way. This could be done through ducting. Your ducting, you may find that your extractor fans with your bathroom or your kitchen might even be linked to somebody else's.
To other flats, yeah.
Yes. And it may go to some form of common ducting in the end. I think that's a crazy system, but it is around quite a lot.
You see it in the movies all the time. The hero's always crawling through ducting that goes throughout the whole building.
Yeah, and that's when they're tracking the mold. Yes, you're quite right. So that common link between all the different flats means that there will be an airborne either spores or mycotoxins or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, we have equipment that will take samples. They take air samples, they take surface samples, and that equipment is sent away. It's checked in a laboratory. The DNA recognizes what kind of issues there are. And people can get headaches and they'll get sore throats and things, not necessarily because of mold. It could be VOCs, which are volatile organic compounds, which are in your furniture. It's in the, as an example, glues that make up a lot of the chipboard furniture.
Yep.
They give off VOCs. Fire retardants in your curtains, in your carpets, brand new bedding, some of the stuff that may be in there. Because of the regulations nowadays about fire retardancy and things like that, you may well find that VOCs are being given off, and that can affect you. So there's a whole load of things, even perfumes or even gas from petroleum. If you live over a garage, petroleum coming up through, any of those things can be easily identified, and they are listed as in what strength they're in, whether they're dangerous or not dangerous. They're listed in what strength and what
the analysis variations. Of the
total analysis. It's a very good analysis, and that's what we can do.
Brilliant. Robert, thank you very much.
And thank you, John.
Don't forget, if you want to be part of the next podcast, email your questions to robert@dampdetectives.co.uk. The Damp Detectives podcast was presented by John Isles. Copyright Damp Detectives. Produced by Fresh Air Studios.